It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It is a good day to talk about Moon Knight Season 1. I am your host, Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Gardner.
Welcome back, folks.
And joining us today on this bonus episode are two special guests. We have with us today, Mac.
Hi.
And Chris.
Hey, what's up?
AKA CB, AKA Chris Brown, AKA Chris Breezy, AKA your boy.
Your boy.
And today we are discussing the first season of Moon Knight, the new Marvel show on Disney Plus. Before we go any further, here's a reminder of what we do on this show. On GDT, we talk about movies and TV shows we love and interview independent filmmakers. Every Friday, we have a full episode where we interview an independent filmmaker or someone else associated with the filmmaking process. And every Wednesday or Thursday, we have a bonus episode where we talk about a new movie, a new show, or something else relevant. This is the bonus episode this week. And on Friday, we will have an interview with the cast of Dreams of Paper and Ink, the new Australian independent film from filmmaker Glenn Triggs, who we previously interviewed on this show. On top of those two episodes, as if that wasn't enough, we have a Monday miniseries coming out every Monday morning. In that miniseries, we discuss the new short film that I and some others are working on, titled Nostalgia, Memories of Tomorrow. There are already two episodes in that series, so check them out if you missed them, and check out all of our back catalog of episodes as well. Okay, so Moon Knight Season 1. It stars Oscar Isaac, Ethan Hawke, and Mae Kalamaui, and it's a Marvel TV show. That's all you need to know. You also need to know that this discussion will contain full spoilers. Spoilers for Moon Knight Season 1. Spoilers for the whole season. Spoilers for every episode. Spoilers for anything Marvel are also fair game. So, we warned you. If you don't want anything ruined, stop listening now and get back to us later. For everyone else, that was your spoiler warning. Okay, so let's start it off. We'll begin with our opening initial thoughts. As always, we let our guests go first. So this time, we're going to start with you, Mac. What are your broad thoughts on Season 1 of Moon Knight?
I was really impressed by the show. I think Oscar did an incredible job. I think it was really different from a lot of the other MCU shows that they've produced in the past year. Honestly, it was a breath of fresh air from a lot of what they've been doing in regards to all of their movies. But I really enjoyed it. I think the cast did an incredible job. The overall story was just incredible. I don't want to give my rating yet, but I was really impressed, and I like the direction that they went with this season.
Sweet. What did you think, Chris Brown? What are your initial thoughts on Season 1 of Moon Knight?
Yeah, kind of like Max said, the big thing that stood out to me was Oscar Isaac's performance as Mark / Steven / Jake. It was very cool. I thought he did a great job. Like, I was just looking at some, you know, articles before I hopped on, and it was like, even in terms of like body language, you know, conveying like which character was which in any given moment, he did a great job. And I thought it was very, there weren't many overt tie-ins to like the MCU as a whole, but like as a standalone show, I feel like it did, you know what I mean? It has legs for sure. And they did a great job of like roping you in and like making sure that you like cared about, you know, what was going on and like the characters, because I know before the series, at least for me, I had no idea who Moon Knight was, you know? So they did a great job of like establishing the world and then establishing the character and then, you know, bringing in the alternative identities and then establishing like everything that else that was going on around it, not in a way that felt like gimmicky or shortchanging anything that was going on. So I really enjoyed it too.
Awesome. Gardner, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm going to echo a lot of what Mac and Chris said already. I think, for one, Oscar Isaac is spectacular. Like you said, Chris, him going back and forth between the characters, his body language, There's scenes where he just seamlessly transitions from Mark to Steven and then back to Mark. And it's just astounding to watch that someone can be that good at acting. I also think, like you, Chris, I didn't really know anything about the character Moon Knight. I was not really sold on it, but I was like, I'm going to watch it anyway because I'm paying for Disney Plus, so I might as well check out what they got on there. And I was really pulled in, particularly by Ethan Hawke's turn as the villain in this show. I thought he did a great job. And just knowing that it was just going to be 6 episodes, I think that helped a lot with it. Like, the pacing, I think, in this particular series is better than the pacing we've gotten in any other Marvel show on Disney Plus so far. I've watched them all, and I think this one being shorter still falls into that Marvel trap of we've got world-ending stakes here. You know, sometimes I just want it to be like something small and contained. That was one thing I really liked about Hawkeye, was that the stakes are very low and it's just kind of a self-contained story. But excluding that, I thought this was so imaginative. I thought it was a departure from a lot of the tropes that you get in the Marvel movies and TV shows. And for that, I really did enjoy it. We'll get more into some of the details, but overall, yeah, I liked this show.
So I'll agree that it definitely takes a little bit more chances, although I wish it would have taken more, I think, but it takes more than a normal one. And I like that someone pointed out that it feels like it could exist without the MCU, not only because it's well done at this point, they've gotten to a point where most of their stuff are going to reach a certain point of quality, and then you add on that some great actors and it's only going to elevate it. But not only all that, but also the fact that it's a contained story that's not feeling the need to constantly reference what they've already built. And it doesn't, in that sense, scare away new viewers, I don't think. But I don't know if I think it was really breaking the mold in any way. Like you said, it's still the same world-ending stuff. And I guess with an actor like Oscar Isaac, I was expecting a little bit more. And definitely with Ethan Hawke, I thought that he wasn't actually given that much to do. Or if he, I don't know. Maybe it felt to me like he was there for a paycheck for this one. And I'm totally fine with that. But I'm not going to then, in my opinion, praise it. Because I just didn't, for me, it didn't work for me. And it came off a little bit like he wasn't, because I know what he can do, and he's someone that I really like. I feel like I've said like everyone's my favorite actor at this point, but he's up there too. I feel like he's someone who knocks it out of the park most times, and he wasn't dragging it down at any point. But again, for me, it didn't feel like it was given that much of him. Like, I liked when he was, we'll get into the specifics of it, but I thought maybe when he was in the hospital, that was like when he got the most to play with, and I liked that aspect of it. But we can talk about that in particular. But overall, I guess I feel a little bit lower than you guys, but not necessarily saying it's bad. But I don't think it's like my favorite yet, because I think that other shows maybe did some more inventive stuff, even though we're saying that this broke the mold in certain ways. I did think that like something like Loki, maybe if it was even setting up future things, I felt like I was more into that kind of stuff and that world building there. And that also, in my opinion, although it was very much like in a world that already existed, it was its own little self-contained story. It wasn't fighting like someone you knew from the past. It wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, for example, is very tied up on the past. So is Hawkeye, even though it's introducing a new characters in both those. It's also like tied up in like the past, whereas Loki was like, it felt like it was his own story. I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but I just want to say that the things that you guys say are the good aspects of it, I totally agree with, but I do want to kind of undercut it a little bit, in my opinion of it, and just say that I think that certain things could have been done better, or they could have maybe tried a little bit more outside the box things. But we'll get into the specifics of it. Let's start with the beginning of it. I know in the past, like for Severance, we kind of went through each episode. I want to do broader topics maybe this time and not go episode by episode, but we'll start with the premise. That'll be our first topic that we'll go and we'll discuss in that episode one, and the fact that we have Steven at the beginning and he's like this bumbling guy at the, he's a, like a curator or something at the art museum, or he's a gift shop worker. He's
not, gift shop. He's, yeah.
He's a curator. Yeah. I don't know why my mind went there at first, but he's not, he's a gift shop worker, and he's not like a superhero guy. Like, he's not sly or he's not like slick or anything like that. He's not the cool guy. And he's definitely not like what you expect out of like an Oscar Isaac character, I would say. That was the first thing that hit me. But we're introduced with his dilemma, which is the fact that he like sleepwalks and he ties himself up to the bed and he tries to keep himself awake. And there's that tape that he plays that's like things to keep you up, like try reading, try this. And he's very into Egyptian lore and stuff like that, Egyptian like religion and stuff like that. And he's reads that like this to keep up. We see him like keep himself up by reading that and stuff like that. And that's going to obviously play a part later. But those are some of the big things that are introduced, I feel like, in the first episode. You guys want to talk about how you felt about the first episode and the introduction of everything and maybe bring up anything that I missed there? Because I know I kind of just did. Again, we're going to do broad sweeping things.
Yeah, I think like some of my initial thoughts of Steven, he just seems like a lonely dude. Like, he's just kind of coasting through life. We see him talking with, I think one of my favorite parts about him, and like, I shouldn't say favorite parts because it is kind of sad, but just, I think you really understand how lonely he is when he's talking to the guy that's all gold. Like, he doesn't even have anybody to respond to his interactions, right? I mean, we later find out that all of his phone calls to his mom are not actual phone calls. So he's just leaving her voicemails. But I think something that really struck me about him is that he just seems like a really lonely and sad guy. He can't get a date. He could get a date, but we later find out that it wasn't actually him who scored that. His whole world is thrown upside down all the time. He can't seem to grasp onto anything, but yeah, he seems to be very passive in life. A kind heart. He seems like a really cool, nice guy, but I think he's really struggling emotionally, socially, in a lot of aspects. But I don't know. I kind of just wanted to give him a hug and be like, it's going to be okay, buddy. Like, you'll get through this. Everything will be okay. But yeah, it was hard to watch at times. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. One thing, like, so kind of in response to the comments about Ethan Hawke, because I feel like I appreciated the performance to, you know, before this, but when you said that, Duncan, it kind of made me think, yeah, maybe there were some points where like he kind of, you know, it felt like he was phoning it in. But at the same time, like, because I think about the first scene of that episode, which is like where he's in the, I guess, monastery, like the office of the monastery type place, and like breaks the glass and puts it in his shoes, and you're like, okay, what the hell is, you know, you're like, what is going on? But it's like, this guy's like clearly this devout, you know, for what, like, because at the time we don't know what, you know, what it is, like what caused, like who he is or any context behind the actions, but he just like walks with glass in his shoes, and you're like, okay, this is clearly somebody, I don't know what he's gonna do, but he's committed to doing it. But yeah, then like looking at Steven, it makes me think of the SpongeBob meme where like the house is on fire and SpongeBob's just like, this is fine, you know, because like literally that's this guy's life. Like, he is taking all these measures to like try to gain some like measure of control over what's going on, but like life is just happening to him, you know what I mean? Like, he can't keep track of who he is when he sleeps. Like, clearly there's something going on, but he just like doesn't have knowledge about it. He only has, like Max said, like the one friend. And then, yeah, super crushing to find out that like his calls to his mom are not calls. He's like, cause he's like fielding full conversations with these people, like with his mom, with the statue in the park. And it's like, life is just not giving him anything back, but he just maintains this cheery disposition where you're just like, oh my God, this guy isn't, you know, he's insane, but not in like a bad way. It's just like, he's crazy. And like, he has every right to be, because his life is like, seems like it would be very hard to endure if you were in the same shoes. And then he just like gets crapped on by like his boss, the security guard, like doesn't know his name, you know. It's just like, he does, it seems like he's going out of his way to like be a good person, and he just gets thwarted by, you know, circumstances at every turn, which is sad. And then one other thing I wanted to bring up was kind of like where the mind games start with the show, is like when he's talking to the little girl in the museum before, like at an early part of the show. And she says, like, she's asking him about what it's like to die or something. I don't remember how they got into the conversation, but he's like telling her what it's like, how the Egyptians thought of the afterlife. And she's like, what was, you know, dying like for you? And he's like, I'm not dead, am I? And then he like turns away and he's like, am I? And so, you know, kind of
the first seed being planted that like we're getting the narrative from like a non-credible perspective. You know what I mean? Like we can't be sure of like the reality that Steven's perceiving is like what's actually going on. And that kind of, you know, manifests itself in other ways as the show goes on. But I thought that was pretty cool. So.
Yeah. I love what you guys talked about with Steven. Like he is such a sympathetic character from the jump and you just can't help but like pity him a bit. And something you touched on, Chris, where you're talking about that he's trying to be a good guy, but he just keeps getting thwarted. You know, he's trying to live a normal life, but these things just keep getting in the way. It felt like from the onset of the show, there was going to be a much more explicit discussion of mental illness, you know, and dissociative identity disorder in particular, but that could be, you know, you could talk about a lot of different issues with this concept. And I was really hoping for the show to go full bore with that. And they, as the season plays out, it becomes a major plot point, particularly the relationship between Mark and Steven, where they literally get personified as two individuals and talk to each other and everything. But it felt like they never quite delved into that deep enough for me for them to really say something. They have that element there and they kind of play around with it, but they don't make a point of it, which was frustrating to me because I thought, okay, we have this show that is so unique in the scope of like when it comes to premise and everything, it's so unique in the scope of what we've already gotten in the Marvel universe. Mac, I think you said earlier, like this could exist, or maybe it was Duncan. I don't know. I'm always bad at this. I always try to say like, oh, this person said this and I'm always wrong. Someone mentioned that, you know, this could exist outside of any of the other Marvel stories that have already been told. And I think that offered them a unique opportunity. And to me, it felt like they kind of teed that up in the beginning of the series and then they never followed through. I don't know, Duncan, maybe that's something that you had issues with as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it felt a little clunky the way they handled it. And I almost wish they would have just not, I guess, but it's hard. Like, if you're going to do this character, you have to do something with it. And it's just like, I don't trust Marvel and they haven't given me any reason to trust them to really handle anything along those lines. And I don't think this was an example of them breaking that rule there. I think that it kind of falls in line with it. Like you were saying, I'm not really that impressed by it. And it reminds me, honestly, of a show I was thinking of earlier along the lines as well of Loki, one that potentially tried a little bit more to be outside the box, which is WandaVision. But in the same sense, Gardner, where you were saying like you felt that what you were looking for there was kind of teed up and then not paid off. That's how I felt about the out of the boxness of WandaVision, where we ended up somehow with a fight in the sky along the same lines. Everything's back to pretty much normal at the end. And it doesn't feel like we got much of a payoff, for me at least, on those first 3 to 4 episodes where there was a lot going on that I really liked. And there was a lot of weirdness that I'm there for that kind of weirdness. And I'm there for the weirdness that they try to do. I don't know. I saw people saying that this show is too weird for them. And I think that's, I don't know what kind of media to recommend to someone like that, in my opinion, but you know, this is very palatable in my opinion. It's just weird, necessarily not always in a way that I would say is capitalizing on it. I would say like, I wanted it to go somewhere with it and to kind of pay off on it, where it felt like, for example, the metaphors in the hospital felt very surface level to me, for example. And everything, I guess, to me felt surface level. That's the best way to describe it. The good things that are done in it, and there are good things that are done in it. Like, I do like, there's some scenes in particular where Oscar Isaac's performance is like, he gets a chance to really do some stuff, like you guys were saying. But overall, most of it, I would say, became surface level for me. And it, to me, it felt like they were setting up more. So maybe there'll be a chance for more of that down the line. But it almost felt like maybe we would get to that in a season, not even 2, but 3 for me. I was, I like, it almost feels like they're in the first third of a you know, the first act of a story, for me at least, like where we got to a very generic ending here, and I'm hoping that that's not the ending arc, because I mean, at the end of it, I mean, we're, like I said, we're in spoilers, we're going to jump around, but at the end of it, he's like, I'm ready to be a hero, or something, I'm paraphrasing, but something along those lines. He was like, I'm ready to be a hero right now, and then he like decides to be that version of himself or whatever, and you know, obviously there, we'll get to it, but
then we have the post-credits scene.
I didn't watch it. I just forgot.
Oh, well, I mean,
I've been watching so many non-Marvel media that I just forgot about the post-credits scenes. So you just mentioned it. I was like, wait, I was like, yeah, I totally didn't watch it. I was like, there is a lot of time left in this when I turned the credits off. I wasn't even thinking.
You absolutely should. You should. It's really crucial, I think.
You guys can spoil it for me for the audience. So
I think you redeemed the last episode, in my opinion.
Oh, okay. So why don't we jump to that right now? Let's talk about let's hear the last episode and the your thoughts on it, and then let's hear the redemption from the, and what the post-credit scene is, like, because I am curious, and I'm sure some of our audience missed it as well. Maybe they should stop, but this is your warning. You're going to talk about the post-credit scene right now if you missed it. So
yeah, I thought personally that the whole last episode was really short. And granted, I think it was probably one of the shorter episodes of the six, but I think they just wrapped up the whole fight scene and everything so quickly. And I know that they were working in within six episodes, so the storyline was going to move really fast regardless. But I just felt like they solved everything really quickly. So I was a little disappointed with how that played out. But Duncan, this is what happened. They cut to Harrow. He's in the asylum. They titled that fifth episode the asylum, so I'm just going to use that word. Someone's getting him out. He's like leaving. He's being wheelchaired out of the facility. He's seeing bodies on the ground. He gets wheeled out, and there's like a big stretch limo out there. Someone places him inside, and then he's looking at a human-sized Khonshu sitting directly across from him, and he's like talking with him. And basically he was like, Mark thought that all this time that I was really after Layla, but in all actuality, like, that's not the case. And he's like, I want to introduce you to somebody. And Mark/Steven/Jake Lockley, who is his third personality, that's who he was playing at that point, was him. He like turns around and he holds up a gun and he kills Harrow. Yeah. So that's how it ends. And I think that kind of redeemed it, because it's introducing us to what could be a second season or whatever they're going to do with these shows. But I did read, unless you guys have like some other information, that Oscar Isaac only signed up for this season. Like, he has no contractual commitment to another season or anything like that. So if he comes back, it's all on his own terms. But I think he enjoyed playing the character. So I could see him coming back. But yeah, that's how it ended.
I just want to jump in real quick because I didn't see it, so I just want to get my real quick reaction. I do think that's cool. Are these motherfuckers not still sharing a body though? Am I missing something? Okay, so it is like he's like still sharing a body with him. Yeah. Okay. Just making sure that, like,
yeah,
because like there is only so many hours in a day, and you know, and we know from Severance that your body gets tired whether you're awake or not for it, right? You know, so like he's got to sleep eventually. Sometimes, like, I'm wondering, like, he's got a villain side, a regular life, and a superhero side. Like, Jesus Christ, sounds busy, but people do it. Shout out to all the people with multiple jobs out there, right? Like, they're the real superheroes, am I right, folks?
And then according to the comic, there's like a fourth one too. So yeah, I don't know how you would manage that, but
yeah, they were teasing Jake all season long. Like, I think it was like the middle of the season when he first gets to Cairo and he blacks out and kills all those guys. And Steven and Mark are talking and they're like, that wasn't me. They're like, oh, there's a third personality out there somewhere. And then it makes sense why at the end of the finale, Khonshu would be like, okay, yeah, Mark and Steven, you guys can go, but I've still got Jake in my back pocket. Like, really sneaky, all powerful God, like, would do that kind of shit, you know? Like, don't worry, I got a loophole up my sleeve. And I think it is cool that they set up for a possible continuation of the story while still, like, you know, this could just be one season if that's what they wanted it to be. But it always feels like, that's one of my biggest problems with these Marvel properties, is it always feels like they're teasing something in the future. And like, I've just got like, you know, years long blue balls. Like, just let's just have the thing be what it is. You know, we don't constantly have to be teasing something in the future. Can we just have one self-contained story that begins and ends? And maybe that's not fair because that's not what they're trying to do. And maybe I should look somewhere else. But that is something that has kind of started to bug me after a couple years, after, you know, what is it? Fucking Iron Man came out in 2008. After 14 years of watching Marvel stuff, I'm like, can we just have something simple for once? I don't know, a tangent, but maybe some of y'all feel that way too.
Look somewhere else, dude. You could argue that sometime soon in the near future, you might not find anywhere else to look. We're getting fewer and fewer options. You know what I'm saying? There's some theaters right. That for some reason are still showing No Way Home and won't show Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm calling you out, AMC Raceways on Long Island. What are you doing? Still showing No Way Home and not Everything Everywhere All at Once. That movie's sweeping the nation, dude. But I digress.
Yeah, no, I think, like, Gardner, to your point, it depends on if you, like, the value of the payoff, for sure. You know what I mean? Like, for me, it was no problem. And also the value of the intermediate, their intermediate content, like, it was no problem to wait from, like, granted, in 2008, I think I was, like, 11. You know, so when Iron Man came out, I was happy to, like, spend my, like, adolescence waiting on, like, Avengers Endgame and then going to go see that and being like, yo, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me in a movie theater. You know what I mean? Like, that was like, that is my vibe to this day. That's how I feel about it. You can't tell me there's a better movie on earth for that time. But, like, now, yeah, like, my opinion of it has kind of shifted, like, to more like curiosity. Like, I'm along for the ride. You know what I mean? Like, they've generated so much goodwill, like, with me personally from that first 10-year stretch that, like, I'm willing to wait around and see what happens. But I get, like, the constant waiting, because a lot of times what will happen is, like, I've seen in movies, it feels like they'll drop, like, hints in a movie about, like, a, you know, future reveal and then not ever circle back to it, so that it just becomes a question that's unanswered, which is what I feel like happened in, like, Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? Where, like, some of the things happened and I was like, yo, we never got, you know, you guys never touched on whatever, you know, issue it was. So I get that. But, like, in terms of this one, I feel like it could be, the ending could be, it could just be the one season and you're just like, okay. Because when Jake Lockley shows up, you're like, wow. You know what I mean? Like, Mark has no control. He really doesn't, which is kind of, like, disheartening for the character, but also it explains a lot of the things that have happened earlier in the season, like you were saying, like the fight in Cairo and then the sarcophagus. I think when they're in the asylum, I think that I remember seeing that scene and I was like, there's totally, like, another Mark in there, you know, some other version of Mark. And I love, Mac, that you brought up how many alter egos he has in the comics, because, like, in the comics, that story is, like, is cool. It's just like, you know, in this we see from Steven's perspective first, and then they build in the other parts. But in the comics, they kind of just have a guy that comes up and is like, I am the left hand of Khonshu. And, like, he is a superhero first. Like, he does the things that he does and then, like, tells people that he's a servant of Khonshu. And then, like, but you don't find out, you know, that Khonshu is real immediately. So for a good duration of, like, the guy's narrative, he just is possibly insane and, like, also has dissociative identity disorder. But in this one, it kind of felt like they didn't take as much of a chance by making that the mythological side of the world concrete, like, from jump, which kind of made it seem like it was, I never really doubted the reality. Like, even when they were in the asylum for a second, I was like, is this really what's going on? But then I was like, no, this is definitely, like, you know, there weren't as many stakes, I felt like, and there weren't as many consequences. So that kind of is where it fell short for me.
Let's talk about you just brought up the Egyptian aspects of it and the religious aspects of it a little bit. I'd love to talk about the Marvel Universe and how we have, obviously, as Guardians, right, who are part of Norse mythology, and then this is now bringing this in, and they even said in the show, like, this is an afterlife, I think they said was the phrasing that they used, and I'd like to see them kind of, because right now I feel like they're pussyfooting around it a little bit, And I'd like to see them kind of just actually attack that and the implications of that. And there was, okay, so there was this video going around that was mocked pretty heavily on Twitter. And it was people saying that they wanted Marvel to basically make all the movies and that all the indie dramas would just be in the Marvel universe, right? But one of the ideas was a Catholic priest, for example, reconciling his religion based on the fact that Thor exists. And something along those lines, I'm not agreeing with the rest of the video, but something along those lines, I think, would be very interesting, especially now that we've had Moon Knight. So I'd love to hear maybe some of your thoughts on that.
I was under the impression, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought they like disqualified Thor being like a mythology. I thought, or like that whole mythology, I thought they considered him an alien. But if I'm wrong about that.
Oh, like you're saying that's just like what that mythology was based on and like.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That
kind of how the Eternals created a lot of other mythology as well.
Yeah, I think that's how I understood it. As like they were aliens, they came and then that religion evolved based off of that is how I was understanding.
So I guess, all right, maybe I'm getting into the weeds here, but I guess my argument is, what's the difference between a god and Superman, who's an alien, for example?
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. And like the idea is that there's different gods, right? And so like maybe, you know, Thor didn't create the people on Earth, for example. He's not that version of God. If you believe in that version of God, whichever version, you know, there's different versions, stuff like that. But like, that doesn't make him any less of a god, right? Like, or the, you know, the god of thunder, right? I don't know. Like, I feel like maybe that's my interpretation of it. Like, I'm not saying, because maybe I'm just wrong, but I'm, you know, based on what you're saying, and like, I think you're right. I guess I'm reading that as like, just how the Eternals, you know, Icarus, for example, and Athena, those, they're gods, am I, right? Are those not gods?
Well, it's like lowercase g god versus uppercase g god, you know, where like one can be killed and the other is like fully eternal, you know?
Right.
I don't know. If I haven't seen Eternals, so I can't really comment on that movie. But like that's a big distinction in like Greek mythology, for example, the lowercase g god having more humanistic qualities than some like supreme celestial being might.
It's just a Zeus. But I don't know. I don't want to get into like Eternals too much, although we did say we can spoil anything, but just since one of our hosts hasn't seen it, I'm not going to just be a dick and ruin it for you.
I mean, spoil Eternal. I don't really.
No, I'm just going to say that I think that there are aspects of it that kind of fall in line with that like unkillable god and stuff like that, where it's like you could argue, for example, that Eternals are angels of a god that is uppercase G god, in my opinion. You know what I mean? And there's also, like, if you get into the weeds of Marvel Comics, you have the idea of, like, time being a being itself, you know? And I think that there's actually, like, two. I think, like, Kronos is, like, something, and then there's another. But there's the idea of, like, love, and love is its own being. And there's things like that that are, like, binding the universe together. I forget, it's been a minute now since I read, I think it was the Infinity Gauntlet, where they come into play, because Thanos, I think, takes them on as well. And it kind of just keeps getting bigger and bigger, where it's like kind of like how when you look at like our known universe and stuff like that, and you're like, oh, here's the Earth, here's this, here's that. And then you get to like Uranus and it's big, and then you get to the fucking stars and they're fucking huge, and then you get to like galaxies and yada yada. It's very like similar to that was kind of the progression with the characters, where it got to a point where it was like every step you were like your brain couldn't really comprehend it because they were just ideas, like the idea of time and stuff like that. But those existing in the comics, I think, are also, you know, when you talk about gods and stuff like that, it's like, where is there? There's no one, I guess, creator in the Marvel universe, at least in the comic universe. And I think that's, I mean, it would be dumb for them to pick one, right? Like, then you isolate a bunch of people then. But I do think it's interesting that they do that in this, that they bring that up, that idea. And I think it would be interesting to see something else down the line that took that on a little bit more. And I'd love to see them bring in, like, you know, with characters like Silver Surfer and Galactus, those ideas of those, like, bigger stuff, which I'm not even that familiar with them in the comics, but I would love to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, I don't know that Marvel wants to get, I don't think they want that smoke, being such, like, a family-oriented, you know, company. I don't think they want to go down those, whatever, like, wherever that would lead, because I was thinking, like, when you said that, I was like, I think they do have a version of God in the comics, and it's called the One Above All, and he's supposed to represent, like, the creators of Marvel, like, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and he like takes the form of Jack Kirby. But then, like you said, they like personify a bunch of other forces. Like they have the Beyonder and like Eternity, the Living Tribune. You know what I mean? Like all these things are supposed to represent these like cosmic forces that like we attribute to God. And they're like, oh, no, there's a character for that, you know? So I don't know how non-controversial that would be for them to like explore on the big screen, because I think it would lead to a lot more, you know, problems for them, like headaches. But I mean, I definitely get your point, because like in Avengers, I remember like Black Widow is like, these people are gods to Captain America, and he's like, I believe in one God, ma'am. And he doesn't look like that. And it's like, well, I mean, is he wrong, or, you know? But I feel like it would be tough sledding for them to like incorporate them without, I feel like, getting a lot of blowback from the religious.
I definitely agree with you about like them wanting to avoid any kind of like controversial topics. And that kind of brings me back to a point that you were talking about, Duncan, when you said that a lot of the people that were talking about the show and didn't really care about it that much, or didn't care for it that much, I should say, they said it was a little weird. And I'm thinking in my head, I was thinking, do they think it's weird, or is it just not what they're used to? You know, I think going back to how we talked about how MCU, they have their tropes and they stick to them. It's very formulaic, but I think this show, because, and I was even talking to Jalen earlier, I don't think he even spent that much time in the suit as Moon Knight, in my opinion. Like, I think there was a lot of character development between Steven and Mark, and I think maybe that's what was weird for them, and not necessarily it doing anything crazy like WandaVision did, in my opinion. I think it just wasn't what they were used to when they think of superhero shows or movies until later on when we get like the major fight scene towards the end. So I think that's probably why, well, one of the reasons why they don't want to talk about that kind of controversial topics, for other than the obvious reasons, but they know their audience, and I'm sure they want to stick to what their audience wants at the end of the day.
And I did see people complaining that he wasn't in the suit for very much of the series. And okay, fair enough. But I'm just more interested in a character drama. I guess I'm not like I don't even know like what their target audience was with this show, because I saw a lot of people like, you know, locals on my Facebook feed being like, oh, this show jumped the shark, it's too weird, da 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 da. And I'm thinking like, it's just not weird enough. Like, I like the character development stuff that's going on, but this could be so much weirder. It's being a little too normy right now, you know? And it feels like with this show, though, there's a lot of things I liked about it, and I think it's one of the more creative Marvel shows that we've gotten in this Disney Plus Marvel era. It feels like they were trying to please everybody. And it's not that they ended up pleasing nobody, but they just kind of didn't, like you were saying earlier, Duncan, a lot of it is just very surface level. And I would have liked for them to have dug deeper into the themes and the possibilities that this premise set up. Like, we've talked about the promise of the premise on this podcast before, and it never really felt like this show fully delivered on that.
Especially when there's a show out there like Legion, for example. I don't know if anyone's seen that, but a show that touches on a lot of aspects that are very similar and does it, in my opinion, visually and storytelling wise in such a better way. And I mean, that's Marvel too, so I don't know if that would just scare everyone off, I guess, because if Moon Knight, again, that's what I was kind of referencing earlier, like, if Moon Knight's too weird for you, I don't really know what to tell you. You're probably just into the regular Marvel stuff, which is fine, that's your palette, but this is not anything that's like out there is what I think we're all agreeing on. And like, if that's too out there for you, then that's fine. But there's shows like Legion out there that go really crazy, and I think that go really fun with it. And we talked about the suits of it, and I just wanted to say that I don't really care how long he was in it because all of them were phenomenal. There, he looked amazing every time he suited up, no matter what it was. I don't know. I think there's like a name for it. I think it might even be like Mr. Suit with the guy that's in the suit.
Mr. Knight.
Mr. Knight. Okay, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
He looks so slick, dude. And when he first was him and then like they're fighting in the street and he threw his jacket down, I was like, no, it's such a nice white jacket. Don't do that, man. He was so slick with that shit. And then just the actual Moon Knight is just badass, I think. I don't know. I was super into it. So whenever, and we got a little bit, we got it from the first episode. It's not like they made us wait like episode after episode for it. We got it in the end of the first episode. I was fine with that. I thought the screen time was fine, especially when the payoff was so good, in my opinion. That was maybe my favorite part of the entire show.
Was the end of the first episode?
The suit in general, I'm saying. But the end of the first episode, I liked that, but I liked that we got to the suit that quick is basically what I was saying with that. Yeah. And then we got to, I think we get to Mr. Knight in episode 2, I think it is. If not 3, but I think it's 2.
Yeah, I think it's 2, yeah.
So what about the relationship, the love interest and the love relationship? What do we think about that in this series?
It was okay. It was a weird attempt at a love triangle between two personalities in one body and then one of the personalities' existing wife. Like, I don't know. It was okay. Layla was such a promising character and her arc just felt like it went very like predictably, like beat by beat. This is what happens with this kind of character in this kind of show. And I just wish that she had gotten a lot more to do. I was generally pretty underwhelmed with that aspect of the show.
I was also going to mention like a love triangle thing. I don't know if you guys have read a lot of young adult romance novels. I have as a young woman growing up. And I just personally hate love triangles. I think they're really old school. And I don't think this was, it was a piss poor example of one, definitely. But yeah, I think it could have been better. But of course the love stories are always second to the main plot, right? And I think this was just another example of that. My one issue is, and I feel like this is also overdone all the time, is not that I have ever discovered my father was murdered in front of my husband, but you're really going to argue about that right in the middle of everything happening. I was so frustrated. I was like, you can discuss it later. Like, just get out, like leave. And I know nothing else would have happened without him dying, but like, I was really frustrated. And I guess I expected more because she is this like really badass character. And she's like, she seems to really know her way in that world, both like fighting wise and just like social skills. So I just assumed she would be like, this is a priority and I'll handle my emotions later. But I guess there's no sense in love, right? But yeah, I think it could have done a better job. And then they didn't discuss it at the end. Like there, he was just like, oh, baby, when they hugged after fighting. And then there's no further talk about them. Like, do they forgive each other? Like he woke up alone in bed. So I'm assuming something's going on, but I don't know. I think it could have been better.
Yeah, I had the exact same thoughts, like that it was weird in its execution. Like it just felt, I don't know, just kind of forced almost. And not necessarily because like, I mean, technically they are in the same body, but I don't know if it was supposed to comment on like the fact that like, even though they're two different identities, they still reflect the one person. I don't, you know, it just felt kind of, it felt strange and not really like it needed to be there for the sake of the story. Like it didn't feel like it propelled anything. And that was like what Mac brought up was like, my biggest problem was that there were no consequences for the fact that like he facilitated the murder of her dad. You know what I mean? Like she's like, like she is like wound up the entire time about finding out, you know, what happened to her father. And then she finds out that like Mark was not directly, but like indirectly responsible for her dad's death. And then they argue about it. And he dies. And I guess it puts everything in perspective for her that like, you know, despite what he's done, he's still more important to her than like his actions, I guess, if you wanted to defend it. But like, for me, it didn't really work. It felt like we could have done without it. But I did like her character and I did like where they went with it. I thought it was not odd necessarily. It just was like, I wasn't expecting her to become a superhero. Like Grindr said, like, this is typical. I was like, yeah, what is going on at the end of the sixth episode? But I thought it was, you know, it was odd.
To me, she felt kind of like she had half an arc where it picked up and left off where it wanted to. It kind of felt like it started it and finished it. Like, it definitely had her a bunch in the finale, but throughout the middle part, it was very sporadic and like where it was actually doing anything. And it did feel like when you guys are bringing up that whole thing, it's almost like she's there just to forgive him at certain aspects. And I almost feel like they want her to be the strong character, which at times she totally is. And she is badass, like you were saying, Mac, and she is given opportunities to be badass. But then how is it that she is given those opportunities and at the end of the day, I'm still not left with this big impression from her? It kind of speaks to them doing a lazy job, I think, with it. And they're much more focused, I guess, with Mark and with Steven and even with Harrow. But like those two characters or those two actors' characters are the focal point of most of it. And it's almost like she's just there to help him along. And it does feel a little bit in my mind, I don't know. She just doesn't feel like she's not a full character, I guess. I could see there being more to her, and it feels like she's missing aspects of what would be a character that would be complete if the show was about her, for example. You would get much more. But vice versa, I think, if the show was about her and you had Oscar Isaac playing Mark as the secondary character, like, I don't see you getting a half-baked story with him, you know? Like, I feel like it's only when, and I don't know if it's because it's a female character, but it feels a little bit like it's because it's a female character, in my opinion, that, like, you're getting half-baked stuff, where I think they do it with a lot of them, even with, like, okay, now we're giving Jane the chance to be Thor, which is great, but, like, where was she, right? And obviously some of that has to do with the acting behind it, and, like, getting the actor, because, like, Natalie Portman's a big name, but it's, like, that's because the series wasn't, the franchise wasn't interested in making her that until now, right? And so it's like, you see that a lot. I mean, when did Black Widow get her movie, right? Stuff like that. It's like very much like, I don't know if like fridging them is the right word, but like, you know, like kind of like a little bit like putting them on ice. You know what I mean? Like, and I'd love to see a story where side characters were able to be full characters, whether they're female or not, but a character like this romantic interest got more of an arc. And I think that shows, like Peacemaker, for example, did a better job of that, where I felt like everyone in Peacemaker was given an arc. And I felt a little bit less like, as we were saying, if this is the first season, like I felt like she's got a lot on the table. And so I only bring that up because I definitely thought that she was well acted and it wasn't the performance that was lacking there, but it was definitely the screenwriting I felt. And not like to say like, oh, like you're a bad screenwriter for this, whoever was involved in it. I'm just saying that I don't think they were that interested in this character, to be honest. And it was more there to help along Mark/Steven.
It did feel like she was kind of let down. And I'm glad that you pointed out the trend with Marvel characters in particular. I wonder if maybe they're reacting to, you know, the audience backlash from Captain Marvel, which is a small subset of a very toxic part of the audience. But we saw how that played out with how they reacted to like the, you know, Star Wars backlash or the backlash or like just not great box office returns of Black Widow. If they feel like they need to sideline their female characters or what, I don't know what's going on there. But Layla is in a weird position where she's not exactly a two-dimensional character. She's like a 2.5-dimensional character. She doesn't make it all the way to being a fully fleshed-out character. She has bits of it, but like Chris and Mac, like you guys were saying, like the fact that she just starts arguing, like she's built up to be really smart and capable, and then she decides in this moment she's going to argue with Mark about her dad, and then at the end just not bring it up, and we get no resolution of that. It just felt very frustrating and just like sloppy writing, like for real, which was very frustrating to me because I felt that she was very promising as a character when she was introduced, and to see her kind of fall to the wayside. I get it. You know, you have six episodes and you've got to tell this story in a short amount of time, but add another episode or commit to another season, like instead of trying to set all this stuff up for a future where you don't even know if you're going to get Oscar Isaac back. let's just do it now. Let's do the best with the characters that we have now. And I know that we're kind of ragging on the show a lot right now and pointing out its flaws. I did still enjoy it, but God, I'm with you. All that shit really annoyed me. I wish that I think Layla deserved better. Sorry, Mac, I think I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's fine. I enjoyed your points. And I just wanted to add that I think that it almost feels like a lot of times, especially with Layla in particular, but in general, like Duncan, you were saying, I think it's just probably like female characters in the MCU. It's like they're keeping them on the periphery, right? It's like not enough attention is given to them. It's like just enough where you can see them all the time, but not enough to actually capture your attention. So I definitely think a lot of times they're in the periphery.
It's like, we'll give you that moment during Endgame where all the women are on screen together, but we won't actually write a fully developed female character with an arc. It's very half-baked, it feels like, with what they're doing a lot of the time.
Which, by the way, fuck anyone who has a complaint with that for a reason not being like, oh, do more. Yes, they should write also, then give them like also the opportunity to do other things. But like anyone who has a problem with that, it's a fucking comic book movie. You don't want to see the comic book team-ups on screen. Like, you think all the Guardians of the Galaxy would stand on like rocks or whatever, like, and like in like poses, like whenever they're doing anything? No, they wouldn't, but it's cool to fucking see it. Like, it's cool to see Iron Man do the pose from the comics. It doesn't necessarily look the best on screen always, but it's cool to see them do the fucking things they do in the comics. And not necessarily this is a panel from the comics, but it's cool to see, you would see them fucking team up. And like, I guarantee you there was a bunch of like, especially like little kids who loved that moment too. So that's just a side note. Like, I know you weren't saying that, Gardner, at all. And I see you agreeing as well. But like, I'm just saying that anyone who had a complaint about it being like too cheesy can fuck themselves, in my opinion. But that's just a little F you to them. But I did want to bring up also, though, just thinking about the shows as well, because I brought up Loki at the beginning being one that I thought was maybe like good in the sense that it was like it went outside the box a little bit more than this, although it, you know, again, still had its formulaic parts. I think that was maybe like Sylvie is one of these characters who was from the bat given an opportunity to be really interesting and given things to do throughout the series. So, you know, I would give a little bit of props to them in that regards, because I do think that, like, I don't want to just diss them. Although, you know, she's a variant of a male character, which is very interesting that, you know, that, you know, it's just like, well, you know, you can really go, if you want to go down to the core, it's just Loki again, right? But she is a female character, obviously. And I do think there's a lot left on the table there as well, but I'm not going to get too much in there. I mean, when you get to Sylvie and stuff like that, and there's some interesting things that could be delved into if Marvel wanted to and Disney wanted to. But like another show, for example, which had a very interesting female character was Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And the show then really focuses the entire time on its male characters, which obviously the two leads of the show are male. But then it's like, I feel like we get more of the John Walker character, which, you know, I liked him and we do like Wyatt Russell on the show. But that character, is he more interesting than, you know, this villain that we have that we don't spend that much time with, who has these interesting motivations? And I felt like, again, she's another good example of one of those characters who we could get more of. But again, we're lamenting a lot of the things that we don't necessarily love about it, but I think that's important to bring up in a show that we've all said that we enjoyed. And we'll show you exactly at the end how much we do enjoy it, so don't worry. We'll put our money where our mouth is, and we will either, I guess, be haters or not, but I don't think we're going to be haters. I think that we're sounding more like haters right now than we are, but it's important to talk about these, I think, like small things that can make or break getting it to certain levels, right? Like there's thresholds. And I think we're all like noticing where it's like not passing certain ones and is passing other ones, right? And I think we've all noticed that it's not a piece of shit. Like, this wasn't like not like it wasn't poorly put together. Like, Marvel doesn't necessarily do that, I don't think. Like, I mean, film Twitter might disagree on like the color and stuff like that, but I don't think that it's ever like poorly put together. I think they know what they're doing, whether it's formulaic or not. They're putting the puzzle pieces together and they're making a movie that's like a movie, right? It's always there, and it's always going to make its money because of that. And I say a movie, like, this is obviously a TV show, but we're talking about the same thing. But do you guys have things that are like that were really superb that we haven't brought up yet that you want to bring up so that we don't sound too much like haters?
I thought the Asylum episode was rad.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree on that. That's another example, though, of like where like Legion, for example, like I'm thinking Legion, you know, not to then just like be like, oh, well, here's a bad thing again. But no, I mean, it's not a bad thing that it's a different show. So, and obviously, like, you wouldn't have gotten the right audience if you had gone full Legion, because you already were scaring people off with this one. So they did what they did, and they found their niche. And it sounds like we all liked Asylum. Mac, you brought it up earlier.
Yeah.
Did you want to bring anything up about it?
That was probably my favorite episode, and like out of all six of them, that Caro has a line. I'm pretty sure it's from the fifth one. He's like, I wrote it down. It says, "We don't live in a material world. We live in a psychic world." I think it was the fifth one. It may have been the end of the fourth one. But I love that line. I think it really hit home to Mark and Steven, because to them, they do live in a psychic world. Like, they're constantly fluctuating between each other, clinging on to the material world, right? Like, half the time they're spent in the psychic world if the other one's physically in the real world, you know? So I love that line. But that whole episode was just crazy to go through the memories and to really see both Steven and Mark have their breakdown scenes, where Mark just did not want to relive his past. And then when Steven I forget what he was doing, but he ended up going back to Dr. Harrow. And that's when we actually see him interacting with him for the first time as Steven, as opposed to Mark. But that whole time that they were in Asylum, it was really incredible and sad at the same time. Like, just seeing what led to the development of Steven and what truly broke Mark is just horrible. I'm fortunate enough to have never experienced that kind of traumatizing interactions with my mom or that kind of trauma, but it's crazy what that kind of childhood can do to someone. And I just loved all the acting and everything that went into that episode.
I love that line as well. Was anyone else singing Madonna when he said that?
Ashamed to admit that TikTok has rotted my brain, and I was thinking of the Saucy Santana song. And then Jalen got a kick out of that.
You're gonna have to, I don't know. I don't know how that one goes.
Material girls, not nah, boots. You don't know that one?
No. I think that, and I am a material girl. Sounds, I mean, a lot, yeah, better than whatever the fuck you just did.
The better song, for sure. Yeah.
Was that a song, or were you just saying, like, that sounded like a gremlin?
Oh, it's a song. Look up Material Girl, Saucy Santana.
He sings like that? I'm going to have
that's
to.
What he, that's what he sounds to, like. Yeah.
That'll be what we outro the podcast with this episode. Nah, I wouldn't do that to you guys.
No, let's do it. Fuck it.
No, it's going to be you doing it on loop.
Oh, let's not do that then.
Happy birthday to Material Girl.
That's what he sounds like, man. I'm telling you.
No, I know. I'm just scared. I know that you're good at impressions, so that makes me even more concerned with what you just did to us. You know, I don't want to hear the original version.
Speaking of, I want to get a quick shout out to the humor in this show. I think a lot of time Marvel humor can be really corny and not make me laugh. But I thought in this show it was really well balanced, and most of the time I was enjoying it.
And I think a lot of that had to do with, we talked about Isaac's performance. I think that's him. And I mean, there's some good writing too. And there was also like the security cam guy when he was talking to him. He was good. So like, other actors did well as well. So I don't want to say it was just Oscar Isaac, but I think that the reason that it was really nailed, and that you're saying that, Gardner, and that it made an impression on you, is because you had a performance like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, nosy. Yeah, things like that.
I would be surprised if they didn't. I want to shout out Andrew Robert from Twitter, and he's a filmmaker as well. He's a student filmmaker right now. He had a post that was like, it's funny how Marvel was like, we can't get rid of Tom Hiddleston. We absolutely need to keep making him in everything we can, which is like, he was like the villain in this, that, and the other. And then now they made him a show after they killed him off. They were like, no, he's here. And I think that they should, if they're smart, do the same with Oscar Isaac. And like, he's not afraid of franchises. He's proven, like, he wouldn't have signed up for another Disney thing right afterwards if he was like gun shy from Star Wars, for example. And I know a lot of people who really like performances like in Card Counter and other things like that are kind of lamenting the fact that he keeps getting stuck in these things. But if that's what he likes to do, man, like, sorry that it's not for you. I don't know what to tell you, because I think it would be great if you could get, like we were saying, we've all talked about the performance that he did. And Gardner, you were just mentioning the comedic stuff. I think that it would be awesome to see like, I want a season three. I'm saying, I'm not talking about season two yet. You know what I mean? I need a good arc with this character if we're really going to flesh him out and really going to make it worth getting Oscar Isaac in the first place, I think. Because right now, I don't think that he was given enough to be like, all right, what, like, you didn't get a full Oscar Isaac. You know, we talked about Nick Cage going full Nick Cage in Spider-Verse. I don't think that you gave him enough to go full blown, but you got peeks at it for sure, right? All the stuff that really worked, in my opinion, I think was like, not to take away from other characters or other actors and their performances, but I think a lot of that is him.
I wanted to give a shout out to Ethan Hawke as the villain, or more so like how the villain was written. I liked that he wasn't just, because I've listened to some of you guys' other, I mean, just like, and looking at other villains in general, and I hate villains that are just like evil because they're evil. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like, I mean, the sadist can offer like a good foil to a character if they're just like, you know, brutal and like hard to overcome. But I like when the villain has a point to like make you question, like, why am I rooting for, you know, the protagonist? Like, does this guy not, like, should he be stopped? You know, and like in this case with Harrow, it's like wanting to, like, the original purpose of him doing this whole thing is like releasing Amit to like prevent people from doing harm before they commit harm. And I was thinking about that, like, at the end of the last episode. I was like, I mean, how reliable is she able to tell that people are going to commit harm? And then, like, what's the cutoff for the harm? Like, is it just if you're a thief, you get murdered? Or is it like, is she just ridding the world of like mass murder? You know what I mean? If she's doing that, then maybe we should let this guy do this. And I just say that to say, like, because one of my favorite villains is Thanos, you know, when he, like, how he has a point that there's too many, you know, there's finite resources and too much life. And so it's like, okay, how you're going about it is not ideal, but.
And could just double resources.
Yeah, could do that. But I mean, is that the, I don't know, if you need the story to happen, which you do, and if you're Marvel, then you got to create the tension some kind of way. So, I mean, not the best in terms of how he goes about it, which you can tell from like the first episode where he just murders that old lady, you know, sucks her soul out. It's like, damn, son. Like, but also, you know, pragmatic ruthlessness is something I, you know, when I see that in a character, I'm like, okay. This is, you know, someone who cannot be bought or like negotiate with. They like are going to do what they're going to do. So good luck stopping them. So I thought he did a good job portraying that. But also there were some problems as well. But
what if Ethan Hawke was around in, I don't know, Austria in the early 20th century? He hasn't done it yet, but this baby's giving me a bad vibe.
He literally said that. They said, they were like, that's what he brought up in one of the, when he was talking to Mark, he was like, Amit could have prevented Hitler. I think, yeah, he brought up that and then like references other tragedies, but he's like, yo, you know, this is what you're missing out on if you don't help me out on this mission I'm on. So, I mean, definitely got a point, you know, if that's on the table, it's like, who are we to stop you at the end of the day?
Also brings up the one of the, we talked about comedy, one of the best line deliveries in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is Don Cheadle with the baby Hitler. It's not a line delivery. It's a, when he's like, why don't we just, and then he does the strangling motion. It's just comedic gold right there. So we've hopped around. We've touched on things from all over. Do you guys have any final sticking points, anything we didn't bring up that you'd like to mention now before we get into the end of the show?
There's something that I did want to bring up. I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on it. So whenever they're in the room full of dead people that Marcus killed, and we see the child come in, which we later find out is Ronald, Mark's younger, I guess Steven's too, Mark and Steven's younger brother. But he's like there, he's not dead like the rest of the people. I was kind of interpreting it as he's not dead like the rest of them because Mark didn't actually kill him, but he's in the room because Mark feels responsible for his death. Did you guys gather that too? Or am I just like reading into it too much? Or was he just in the room to lead Steven to that memory?
I think that's a good reading. I didn't think of it necessarily myself, so I'm not going to take credit and be like, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. But I think that absolutely, as soon as you said it, I was like, that doesn't sound crazy to me whatsoever. It actually sounds like a great reading of it, and I'm going to subscribe to it.
Yeah, I love that reading of it. Because when I first saw it, I kind of thought, like, I couldn't tell if he had just walked into the room or what was going on there. But there's definitely, they're intentionally, like, setting him apart from everyone else. And I think you really touched on why they did that.
Yeah, I had forgotten that kid was even, I forgot that he led him to that memory. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't even think about that. That's a good point.
I did watch this twice. I watched it and then I rewatched it in preparation for this. So
we love to hear that.
The CGI, I just thought about, but like in the Asylum episode, like the use of the hippo, I thought was strange, and they backed off of, like it was a good character. It was just like the inclusion was kind of jarring, which kind of throughout the show, the pace was like, was pretty weird. But in that episode specifically, where you're dealing with like heavy emotional content, and then we just get to this like kind of video gamey part. I remember watching it, and the way she was delivering her lines, and they were like trying to get the scales balanced. It felt like a non-playable character in, you know, a video game. And not that the stakes were as high as they were, and that they had just both experienced like trauma, you know what I'm saying? Like had relived important pivotal moments in their lives, and they just kind of gloss over it. And I also didn't like how they saved the CGI budget until the last episode, but I guess we're about to get into that.
The last episode I thought looks great, to be honest.
I do want to add that like all the CGI and like when they're on the boat or Ark even, my inner like childhood nerd, I don't know if you guys read the Kane Chronicles. I think it's pronounced Kane Chronicles, but Rick Riordan, he did Percy Jackson. He wrote a separate trilogy about Egyptian mythology, and I read that when I was a kid. So it was really kind of cool to see all the stuff I had read about as a child kind of come to screen, because I don't know of anybody that's done like an adaptation of those books or any kind of Egyptian mythology kind of storylines before. So I thought that was really cool, but that's just me being a nerd and enjoying that stuff.
Yeah,
well, now they're doing the Percy Jackson series on Disney Plus, so who knows, that might be in the future.
Yeah, I heard about that. I'm excited.
That's gonna be lit. But also, yeah, that they didn't show the other gods, like when they did the Ennead, they didn't show anyone else, and it was like, oh, I want to see, you know, because that would have been cool.
Not enough money, I guess.
It's just Marvel. $1 billion a year.
So we did talk about, I would say, most of the things that happened in the finale. Do you guys have anything from the finale that you wanted to bring up before we get into the final thoughts and ratings?
I like that Mark and Steven finally had a bit more control with each other. Like towards the end of it, it wasn't so much fighting for space in the body. They were more cohesive, and they seemed to get each other much better. And I think that's a result of them having to go through their memories to balance their skills and like really getting to understand who each other, who they are and like who they've become as people, especially Steven, because I feel like Mark obviously was aware of Steven, but Steven wasn't aware of Mark. So there was a lot of holes that they had to fill for each other. So I like that they were finally able to kind of become one person, like separate people within one person. Yeah, that makes sense. But I like that a lot. They seem to have a better grasp on that. Until we have Jake, Mr. Lockley.
So, folks, it is that time. Na 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 na. We'd like to introduce our new special guest. We have a fifth member of the squad tonight coming in to join us for final thoughts and ratings. Jalen? Welcome to the pod.
What's up? My final thoughts of the show, I thought it was really interesting and new, bringing in a new character and everything. I could see how hard it would be to like grasp the character without rewatching it if you haven't read the comics or anything. But I definitely thought it was good. I wish there was more of the suit and CGI and everything and more action. But I think Oscar Isaac did a good job like bouncing between each character and portraying them nicely. And I would give it around an 8 in rating, especially with the post-credit scene. especially if there's going to be a second season too.
Jalen, this is your one chance right now to rebut everything we just said. You want to tell us that we're wrong, or where we got it right, real quick?
Well, I kind of agree with most of it. Yeah, definitely needed more of the CGI, more action. And but the story was good. If there was anything I could change, I think it would have been better as a movie than a TV show. But that's just my opinion.
And there you have it. That was Jalen's one shot tonight, of course. But he will be back. That's a little tease for future episodes. We have him coming for next week's Doctor Strange episode. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. That's the second Doctor Strange movie coming out. So we thought we'd bring him on tonight, tease himself a little bit, show you his thoughts. I agree. I think movie maybe would have been the route to go. And I think that they would have kind of confined themselves into doing some more fun stuff quicker and like maybe even going weirder because of that. Who knows? And, you know, maybe they would have gotten like some multiverse budget in there where they could do some kind of Doctor Strange visuals as well. You know, I could see some Doctor Strange visuals going a long way in a Moon Knight series. So I love what you said there. Not a bad rating either. Mac, you're up next. What is your rating and what are your final thoughts on Moon Knight?
Oh, I went into this with the intention of giving it an 8.5. But after further discussion, I think I'm going to have to deduct some points. It's going to get an 8.3. I still think it's a... I still thoroughly enjoyed the show. Like, despite my complaints, I would recommend it to anyone. I would rewatch it a third time, mostly just because I love watching Oscar Isaac as an actor, and he's not bad to look at. But overall, I thought the show did a great job, and I think if Marvel continues to go in this direction, I know we said that it was very similar in a lot of ways, but I do think, in my opinion, it was really different in a lot of ways. But I think if they kind of continue in this route and focus more on the characters and less on the action, I know it's still a superhero movie at the end of the day, but I really think they could do something incredible with the future of superhero movies / comic book movies. 8.3.
Very fair rating. I like it. CB, can we get your final thoughts and your rating of season one of Moon Knight?
Yeah, after this conversation, I'm like, Mac, I got to deduct some points. I was going to say like 8.2 earlier, but I think now closer to like 7.9. Yeah, tough creator. I mean, no, yeah, just, you know, it was very good. And Oscar, like if I could grade on Oscar Isaac's performance alone, it would be probably, you know, closer to a 10. But in terms of just the narrative and how it ended and kind of how they put a bow on it almost, it felt like at certain times when dealing with like more complex stuff that they kind of didn't follow through all the way, I would have to say 7.9. I would watch it again maybe in a year when I run out of Marvel stuff to watch, but not anytime soon. But I did enjoy it, especially having no knowledge of the character or any of the comic book storylines. And I think they did a good job of establishing Moon Knight for future installments. It's just a matter of how those hold up. So
bring out your shame bells, folks, because that's right, none of these folks brought a unit with them. First day on the pod, is it? What's going on here, folks? We're just playing. But I'd love to hear if you guys have a unit that you could throw me out there right now, real quick. If you could give me your rating with a unit out of 10.
Well, and I would say 8 scarabs out of 10.
All right, I'll give it 8.3. Steven falling out of beds out of 10.
I'm going to say 7.9 goldfish with one fin out of 10.
All right, Gardner, you know what that means. It's your turn. Put your money where your mouth is. Final thoughts and rating. Season one, Moon Knight. Let's hear it.
Overall, I did quite like this show. I like that it differentiated itself from the other Marvel things we've gotten over the past couple of years. It did feel fresh, even though it was still constrained by a lot of those Marvel tropes. Oscar Isaac is fantastic as always. I didn't hate Ethan Hawke's performance as much as maybe Duncan did. I thought, yeah, he kind of phoned it in a little bit, but I, you know, it's Ethan Hawke. I like seeing the guy on screen. However, I do have the problems with it. Like I voiced during the episode, it felt surface level at times. It felt like they sidelined Layla. And I just wish it had done more. For that reason, I'm giving Moon Knight season one 7.7 balanced scales out of 10.
Yeah, folks, not to be the number one hater at the hater ball, but I am going to say that I thought this could have been better. I think you can't come at me with Oscar Isaac, Ethan Hawke. I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with Mae Calamawi, but you know, you can't come at me with two of those actors who I know and not have me expect something that I think is going to be a little bit more elevated. And then you also can't start doing weird things and then not have me want something like Legion, for example. I know I brought it up a couple times, but it's like when that exists and then you're going to, for example, do an Asylum episode and it's like, and like, there's been so many metaphors done with asylums and stuff like that. And like, is it real? Is it not? This, that, and the other. And it's like, it's been done a million times. Like Marvel is not going to be the guy who are going to nail it, to be honest. Like, no offense to them, but even when they got Oscar Isaac and in my opinion, the best version of Ethan Hawke that you get in the series is in there. But even when that's happening, they're not going to be the guys to nail it. That's the fact of the matter. It's still a little bit cookie cutter. They could have done a lot better. The visuals I thought were great, especially in the finale, but I thought the CGI was well done, in my opinion. Maybe it's a little bit of a puppet feeling with the one character that you were talking about, CB. I'll give you that, potentially. I wasn't necessarily looking at the lips, so maybe for me, I was just looking at the rest of it, and I thought it looked pretty realistic. For a show, at least, and for the Marvel shows, I mean, I think they've done worse. Like, that purple shit when he hit the ground was bad. That was worse, I would say. That looked like it was from maybe a CW show. But that was not an effect they needed to spend the money on, because who cares about that? But whatever, it was in the recap of like the last couple episodes at the beginning of this finale. So I kind of stuck out in my mind as we were talking about it. But the rest of the CGI I thought was, especially again in the finale, was really well done. So performances are there, not a lot in the script to really play with. Could be weirder. Fun, but at the end of the day, like I said, I'm not even looking for a season two. I'm looking forward to season three. Of this, I want them to really develop this, and like then I'll probably be invested, because I think it'll take a little bit more time, especially if they're doing like stunted seasons like this, which is not to say stunted in a bad sense, but it is like shortened from what, you know, you would expect. But all that to say, I'm giving it 6.9 Khonshu, I hardly know you, out of 10. That's right, those are our ratings, and with that, that brings us to the end of the show. Mac, CB, thank you guys so much for joining us. Jalen, thanks for coming in at the end. We can't wait to have you on for the full episode on Doctor Strange.
Thanks for having us, Duncan and Garner. This has been great. Thank you.
Yeah, super fun. Super fun experience, y'all.
A lot of fun.
Right now, they all have guns pointed to their heads. They hated this. We forced them to say that. But anyway, maybe they'll come back for a future episode. We'll see. We might have scared them off, but we know we've already roped Jalen in. He's coming back next week. But I thought this went well. Thank you guys. Honestly, the insight you guys brought, like, could tell that you guys were fans who were watching it throughout, which is really, you know, Max, like, I watched it twice before. I was like, you know what? It shows. Like, this was, you guys brought a discussion to the table today, which was exactly what we asked for. And we've, you know, we always say this, but we kind of have gotten really lucky, not only with our interviews that we've done with people who make films, but also with our guests who are our friends, who've like come on and like kind of showed their potting experience and like kind of put us to shame, because we've been doing this for a little bit too long now and you guys are just as good as us. It kind of makes us look like assholes. So thanks for that. So thank you to you guys. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you for sticking around to the end. We appreciate it. Thank you to our recurring listeners as well as our new listeners. We hope you enjoyed it, and we hope you stick around for more. Remember, we have our full-length episodes releasing on Fridays, where we interview independent filmmakers or other people involved in the filmmaking process. This Friday, we have an interview with the cast of Dreams of Paper and Ink, the new Australian independent film made by Glenn Triggs, former guest of the pod. You guys will remember Glenn from being one of our first guests ever on the pod, as well as being a recent guest to talk about this film in particular. So it'll be exciting now to get the perspective from the cast as well. That episode releases on Friday. This is our bonus episode this Thursday. Next Monday, we have a continuation of the Monday miniseries episodes with episode 3. We'll have a guest other than me on that episode, if you're sick of hearing me talk. Remember, Nyatva hosts those Monday episodes, and me and Gardner will always be here on Wednesday/Thursday for the bonus episodes, and Friday for the full episodes. Next Wednesday, Jalen will be back with us for our bonus episode on Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Then on Friday, we'll have our full-length episode where we have an interview with screenwriter Nick Asunto. Stay tuned for all of those future episodes, and also if you've missed our back episodes, and also if you've missed our back catalog of episodes, check them out as well. You can follow along with us by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere you listen to podcasts by searching the letters G, D, T and subscribing to us there. Remember, we're available everywhere you can find a podcast. So be it the big ones or be it a small one, just search the letters G, D, T and subscribe and you'll never miss an episode. In the meantime, you can also follow along by following us on our social media platforms. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Good Data Pod and on Facebook at GDT Podcast, where we post all of our new episodes. Stay tuned for our future episodes, and we will talk to you again on Friday.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. We love you. We'll see you on the next one.